Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast program. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your peers on the entrepreneurial journey of self-discovery, leadership revolution, and life success. Learn something new from our mentoring conversation today. Hey, everybody, it's another Monday. In the studio today, we have Rick Macias. He's the director, sales trainer, and coach for the Sales Board in Minneapolis, Minnesota, a sales training and consulting firm that offers the Action Selling Program. Rick brings over 20 years of experience in sales, as well as over 7 years of sales training and coaching in many industries. He has experience facilitating workshops that range from 5 to 45 people and has experience as a speaker for groups as large as 3,000. After consistently demonstrating the ability to rise to the top in a selling environment, he advanced to divisional sales trainer with a national company and has been helping individuals and companies all around the country to achieve increased sales revenues through the way they sell. Most recently, Rick has been a successful seller and trainer of the Action Selling Communications process. Rick lives in Eden Prairie, and we'll talk a little bit about your wife, Deb, and your two dogs, and we'll get to know you a lot better because you're also a golfer, you're a trainer, you compete with the dogs, you're a tennis player, you like to travel. So welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Very well-versed person. Okay.
I'll do my best.
Yes. All right. Well, the reason that I felt like I just keep hearing from people over and over we always need, no matter how long we're out there selling, and building relationships with people, it seems like over time we can kind of get a little sloppy. Yeah. Or we just kind of take it for granted. And when we're training other people, in our companies, it's not as easy as, we haven't defined it as much as we need to.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that'd be correct. I agree with that.
Okay. Is that what you see out in the field?
Yes, yes. It's easy. I mean, like anything, right? It's easy to get comfortable in a certain way of doing things and then forget some of the finer points, or if things are going well enough, forget to maybe look at how we can improve ourselves. So yeah, I think that's spot on.
Oh, great. Okay. You and I met at the Professional Sales Association. You gave this fantastic presentation on the action selling process. And I thought it was so applicable with the 5 different buying decisions that people make and also the 9 different steps that we need in order to close the sale, but not often people skip steps and
yes.
In the relationship building process. And then as somewhere along the way, the relationship falls apart or the sale does.
Unfortunately, yeah, that can happen.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. So anyways, I like your hands-on approach and also reinforcing that the traditional sales process is still relevant today.
Definitely.
Yeah. And I was so impressed that we've had some extra meetings and we decided that we're going to do an event together.
Yes, and I'm excited about that.
Good. So I'm just going to say what the event is so that people can hear it at the beginning of the show. We'll revisit it at the end of the show because I have an action step for them to take. And then I would like to get to know you better and give you an opportunity to kind of share a little bit more about yourself so everyone has a better understanding of who you are.
Sounds great.
Okay, cool. So June 19th, I am launching We Mentor Mini Lab. It's for emerging to experienced entrepreneurs, and it's from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. It covers lunch. We have only 30 spots available because we want to, Rick and I want to be able to study the businesses that you're all in of the 30 people that attend. And we would like to go a little bit more in depth that we can't do with a larger audience. The name of our We Mentor Mini Lab is the yin and yang of increasing revenue in today's economy. So we're going to take a look at your sales process that you've got in place right now, and we're going to upscale it and take a look at it from a variety of different perspectives, like how are you utilizing social media? And are you involved in any type of Facebook Live events or starting a webinar? Or how can you take your traditional sales process and elevate it to in a way that makes sense online? Because the principles that you go over, Rick, are in the process of sales doesn't change. It doesn't matter whether you're in person or, I mean, at some point you got to be in person with people. But even if you aren't, there's got to be some ways in which you can connect with people in a more natural way.
Yes, connecting and communicating. I mean, that's what a big part of it is about.
Yeah. Okay, absolutely. So we would all like you to, both of us would like you to think about joining. We would love to, if you're in the Twin Cities area, it'd be easy for you to just sign up online at wementor.com. The cost is $79 to the general public. And we've got a special prize for those through the first three who sign up. All right. So how are you, Rick? How are you feeling?
I'm doing well. You've got me feeling very relaxed and excited to be here.
Oh, good.
Yes.
All right. So Rick filled out the self-awareness mentoring journal. And I'm just going to check in and say I'm open-hearted. I'm feeling vulnerable. I, like many people, have, when you're in the process and invested into growth and personal growth and development and your leadership skills, and you're kind of, you're trying to stay out of your ego and really kind of make, live a life of depth. I look at life as kind of an opportunity to learn. And for many years, maybe people will be surprised to hear this, but people either have like a fear of success or a fear of failure. And the majority of people have kind of a fear of failure. Do you have either one?
Oh, definitely a fear of failure.
I've
heard people talk of a fear of success. I'm not sure I can personally get my head around that, but of failure, absolutely. I think about that every day when I interact with somebody or set out to do something.
Okay. So I experienced the fear of success. And I've been, it's been rippling and up and coming up in really a big way. I know people are surprised. Mike Abea to my right here is looking at me like, what? Boom, boom, boom. I guess I just feel, and I was trying to track, like, when did this start to surface? And so we're going to take a little bit longer just to share this because I think that, it's good for me to talk about it. It's good for people to understand a little bit more about what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And if you're experiencing it, just like the fear of success, fear of failure, it can paralyze you if you're not in touch with, you know, how it's showing up in your life. So for me, the fear of success shows up with me trying to sabotage myself in these subtle little ways, but to grab my attention, if I don't get it right away, which I normally don't, then it starts showing up in a bigger way. Like I sent out a stupid email, and you know, I was not grounded in myself, and it was like an email that I would never ever send. Like, it was so out of character, and I'm like, what the heck? What am I doing? You know, it's one where you just send out an email, quick response, mm-hmm. but it's derogatory. And so I got like really bad feedback. And I was just really
like caught off guard with myself mostly. And then, you know, a big apology and, you know, I had to rectify the situation with, thank God I could. Mm-hmm. And the person was generous in this, the spirit of it. But I was tracking back to like, when did that little seed get planted of this being afraid of success? And I think if we're born, like we start showing at a young age, maybe we've got like leadership, you know, skills. We take initiative. And okay, so I remember this showed up for me in when I was like 5 or 6 and I was learning about Jesus. And I was like, oh my God, he died on the cross. You know, a spiritual religious leader, you know, who changed people's lives was crucified. And to me, it was like, wow, anyone who leads, they're going to be crucified.
I could see how that can make that kind of an impression on a young person. I never looked at it that way, but that I think that's very logical to view it that way.
Yeah. And then I just, so I started, you know, noticing like people in different leadership positions. And then I didn't see like women, you know, or, you know, they were in certain roles within the church and they seemed to be a little bit safer. Like, you know, the nuns were putting themselves out there, but they weren't like getting crucified or, I don't know, you know, just my experience. But then I just started noticing kind of discrepancies in leadership between men and women. And I thought, well, what if I wanted to lead a church? Or, you know, then I'm like, well, that's, you can't serve. You know, there's just no track for mm-hmm. a woman to go in that direction. There's becoming a track. Mm-hmm. But then I was thinking, well, there's so many other things that I'm interested in. And I grew up on a dairy farm and, you know, I thought, oh, I don't want animals, but, you know, don't want to work with animals. My dad wanted us to all get into like pig farming and dairy farming. And anyways, tracking the fear of success.
Right.
Every time I tried achieve something, something bad happened. This is just one other example, and then I want to turn the tables onto you. But I wanted to talk a little bit about it because we don't hear, we hear a lot about the fear of failure. And lots of people have examples of what that looks like for them or for other people. And so they kind of get an idea of what to look for within themselves. But for fear of success, it shows up where people are sabotaging themselves. Like the farther they get along achieving a big goal, they can sabotage themselves along the way. And so like even like getting my master's degree, I had written my thesis. And I was so scared, you know, to deliver the presentation. And I was having some difficulty with my professor around it. On the way to justify my dissertation, my car broke down. And I hadn't been living in the Twin Cities very long. And so it was like I don't remember exactly, but I remember it like being in the middle of the road. There was this sign and you could like, I just kind of went up on the curb and just parked there. Mm-hmm. And then we didn't have cell phones at the time. So I ran to find a phone, a payphone. I called my professor and she was like, she didn't believe me at first. Mm. And she said, if you don't get down here, you will not pass. And I'm like, I will get a cab. I will be there shortly. And so I delivered it, but I went and it turned out great. Uh-huh. I gave a great presentation, was shook up and everything. But those kinds of things, like I almost didn't get my master's degree. You know, I was so shaken up. And my car, like the odds of that happening are very slim. Like I've never, you know, I didn't even have any car problems before that. And then all of a sudden on that day, you know, I just have this, my car, you know, sure enough, right? But I looked at it like I almost like the universe is saying, I'm putting out into the universe, I'm so scared, I don't want to get this degree. You know, I can work hard at it, but when it really comes down to the final nitty-gritty of delivering my presentation and getting that MA, mm-hmm. you know, I'm going to kill myself in the process. So go ahead. You look like you want to say something.
Well, I'm certainly not a psychologist. That's for sure. I can promise you that. But it's interesting. I almost think this comes down to a reference of perspective. So to that point, what I'm hearing is you felt that because of your feelings and the way you, your nervousness or whatever it was towards this particular situation, that that is what brought on the car breaking down, when I'm assuming, right, there was no way you could have anything to do with that. Well, from the flip side, and you're saying, you know, you're nervous of success. Well, I'm nervous of failures. And I train very hard physically for certain endurance events.
Yeah.
And I seem to struggle every time I get to this point of feeling, wow, I'm where I want to be physically. And it inevitably is right before a big event I have scheduled. I come up, some injury occurs. And these are real injuries. I don't make the injuries happen, but they do. So to your point, in my mind, when I think of failure, it's like, wow, am I ever going to be able to get to that start line without my body breaking? So I feel like you and I are experiencing the same thing, but my perspective is, oh, that means I'm failing. You know, I'm afraid of failing, but you look at it from the perspective of, wow, I'm afraid of succeeding. And we both have this in our minds, and things outside of our control are occurring, and we are so emotionally tied to them, we actually ask ourselves, is this because of my thought process?
Yes.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
Is that making any sense?
Well, it's two sides, you know, two sides of the coin, right?
Yeah.
But once I explain it, then you're like, oh, yeah, it kind of looks similar. It just shows up, you know, it still shows up.
It shows up, but we're looking at it from a different side.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Oh, very cool.
I don't know that where it takes us, but that was an interesting conversation.
Well, I think that the audience, well, because you're an endurance sports person, I thought that you would understand that.
Well,
and have something to contribute about that, because you have on these endurance events. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it so the audience can get to know you a little bit?
Well, okay, I'll gladly do that. But to the point, the road you started to go down is one, I mean, I don't have a master's degree, but I have numerous degrees. And any degree program, especially something like a master's, in my opinion, that's an endurance event, both mentally and physically.
Oh, I never thought about it like that. Yeah.
Yeah, especially if that's not the only thing in your life. If maybe because it's your master's, my guess is you might have already been working, had some kind of a job. It might not have been just the schooling. All the time and effort, both mentally and physically, to do whatever, you know, manage your life to wherever it already was, plus include the rigors of gaining a master's degree, that sure constitutes an endurance event in my book.
Okay.
I think you need to give yourself more credit.
Okay.
Anybody out there who's gone through higher education, it's definitely an endurance event.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you for that.
Perspective.
Yeah. So I was, well, and this stuff embeds in your body. And so that's why I do yoga. And I had like this other piece of where I was sabotaging myself, where I just wanted to unhinge it out of my body, out of my psyche. And I'm like, I am succeeding at this podcast despite myself.
You're definitely succeeding at it. Yes.
Yes. And the same with any other work that I'm doing, but you get shaken up every time you're bumping up to a level in which you've psychologically kind of got, you know, put a little bridge there for yourself, which I've done, you know, and then it's like, okay, now I have to break through it because those things that we learn are not only in our family of origin, but also in the broader society are either reinforced or they cause you to think, no, the society doesn't believe that, you know, women can't succeed at entrepreneurship. You know, what's in place that helps women get further along or, you know, whatever we're working with, you know, in our paradigm of what we've been taught. So, Thank you for saying that. So today was like a really big day for me. Like I let go of some more of that internal stuff. I was really shaken up emotionally. And I think when you are in the process of kind of sabotaging yourself, you don't also realize that the other people that are affected by that. So I'm kind of, and so I was hyper aware that, oh, my husband is affected by, you know, how I'm thinking, and my daughter's affected by this, and that doesn't feel good. And I look at the hurt in their eyes, you know, because I'm, you know, not being positive about myself, you know? And so I think that's the importance of this work and the self-analysis and doing the self-awareness mentoring journal where we're checking in with ourselves on a regular basis, because I think we bury those feelings really deeply. And so bringing them up in the air so that you and, you know, people can talk about it, and we're talking about it on air, because it not only brings comfort, us feeling more comfortable, like, okay, I've got nothing to hide,
right?
You know, right? There isn't this big emotion that's behind me, you know, that I'm trying to like not allow to come across the mic. We're just talking about this in a real way, so that we can get these emotions out, identify them so they're not controlling us.
Yeah, sounds like a very healthy process to me. So I'm glad to be a part of it. You know, I don't know. I don't remember if it's on here, but uncomfortable certainly comes a little bit to mind. But at the same token, freeing. I mean, it's a very healthy process, and one that I'm guessing most of our society probably doesn't engage in enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks for bringing this to the masses.
Oh, great.
Me.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. All right, high five.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, so moving on.
Yes.
Yes. Tell us a little bit more about yourself, like how you grew up and how you got involved in your endurance sports. And
sure. It's, I mean, I grew up, call myself a geographical mutt. My family's from New York, and I was there till I was six. And
geographical mutt.
Yeah.
Because, okay.
Well, you know, everybody always asks, where are you from?
Yeah.
Well, let's see. I was born in New York and lived in the city until I was six. And then we moved down to Florida, and I lived there for 20 some odd years. And then I bounced back up here to Minnesota for another 20 some odd years. So it's hard to say, where are you from? Because to me, where you're initially born,
yeah,
that's kind of where you're from and your roots. But I was really only there till I was six.
Yeah.
You know, and so much a part of me, I feel like, grew up in Florida.
Sure.
But then it was literally about 2 months ago when I had this conversation with somebody, where are you from? And I realized I had to ask myself, am I really from Florida? Because now I've lived in Minnesota longer than any other place in my life.
Oh, so that's starting to feel like this is where I'm from.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
So, but, you know, that being said, a very small, very close family, most of my family was Spanish, because on my mother's side, I didn't know a lot of her family. It was mostly my father's family, and they were Spanish. And, you know, Spanish stereotype is known for the family unit, or at least the Spanish family I grew up in. So maybe I even have a misconception of that, but we're very close. That being said, now we all live kind of spread around the country a bit, but we
How many are there
close.
Of you?
Well, there's just me and my father and mother and sister.
Okay.
And, you know, obviously some extended families in there, you know, with nieces and nephews and cousins and whatnot. But that's on my side. And then I've got my wife's side of the family too as well. But
sure.
Just growing up with, you know, the family you think of. But even though we live at different areas of the country, we stay in very close contact. So I still feel like I'm part of a close-knit family. And my wife's family, the majority of them, is only 3.5 hours from the Twin Cities.
That's Deb.
And that's Deb, yep. Mm-hmm. And so most of her family is up in the Fargo area, and we visit them regularly or communicate with them regularly. So, yeah, to me, family is definitely important, as well as friendships. I
sure.
cherish both.
And what was that like for you to move when you were 6 years old from New York to Florida?
You know, it was exciting as a young kid. You know, you live up New York or anywhere north, I'm thinking, Florida sounds exciting to just about anybody from the north, yeah, right?
Right.
Exactly. Especially warm this weather. If you're up here. Yeah. And, but what I didn't realize until I moved there was, due to employment reasons, my father wasn't able to make the move full time with us. And I don't think I grasped that or understood it as a child until all of a sudden now he's heading back up to New York and I only see him for one weekend a month. And that was about the first 8 or 9 months that we were down there until he could find employment down in Florida. And as a child, those 8 or 9 months seemed probably more like 8 or 9 years.
Yeah.
So that was tough. And the particular, I don't want to take a shot at the Floridian school system, but the specific school system I was at transition to from a private school to a public school down. Trust me, a private school in New York City is night and day from a public school back in the early 70s down in Florida.
Sure.
And so just the cultural shock.
Yeah.
Along with, you know, missing my father, it was, that was what was an exciting prospect turned into pretty traumatic.
Yeah.
For a while.
So how did you cope?
I didn't cope well, actually. I don't think I did as a child cope. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was unfortunately the guy that was in the principal's office with the bellyache crying every day and having to have mom come pick me up from school. So I'm not so sure I could even say I did cope.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to answer that. All I know is once my father was back in the picture full time, then things were great.
Okay. Did you have a chance to, did you ever talk to your dad about it or your mom?
I mean, it's something that's just casually been discussed over the years, you know, remembering what that transition was like. Nothing that we ever got in touch with each other emotionally. You know, we never discussed it at a deep level.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, I know my parents certainly realized it was traumatic and rough on everybody.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just, once my father was back, 9 months was over and then we moved on like nothing happened and things were great. So,
okay.
And whether that was a healthy thing psychologically or not, I don't know, but that's what we did.
Yeah. Right. Right. And what'd your parents do?
Well, my father did a variety of things. He, was, first, a mechanic.
Okay.
For the airlines, but he also was always very much involved in sales. But because of his mechanical and technical background, he always had a very strong technical aptitude that started probably back in the Navy and carried with him into some of his first jobs. He ended up then in computer technology as a technician, you know, more of a hardware specialist.
Sure.
But in the 70s recession, after he was laid off, then he always wanted to work for himself, the American dream.
Yeah.
And he tried numerous businesses that struggled and eventually came across a couple of businesses that were successful for him and he was very happy.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he did a variety of things.
Partnership?
No. I've always been impressed. Just total solopreneur.
Okay.
His own and did well with his last two businesses and he was very happy. And to me, that's the American dream. If you're doing something that you like and it's honest work and you're providing for yourself and your family, to me, that's success.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So I always envied him for that because I've had numerous opportunities in my career where I considered going out on my own. But, you know, my father is always, he was never arrogant or cocky, but he definitely exuded confidence.
Yeah.
Whether he was nervous and just put on a front, I don't know, but he always seemed confident and determined and did it. Whereas when I had some opportunities to maybe go down that path myself and I really wanted to, I lacked the confidence. I just, to your point, maybe, I don't know if it was, I felt it was fear of failure. So I came up with excuses or reasons why, this just isn't a prudent move.
Okay.
So I never did branch out the way he did.
Okay.
Yeah, or that you did, right? You've made your own way too, and it's very impressive.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, well, yeah, I just feel like some things you just need to do, right? You know, no matter what.
Yeah.
Like I get pretty headstrong when there's an idea that kind of sits with me and it kind of like resonates. Like when the idea came together when we were on a road trip out west to Wyoming, And Matthew had downloaded iTunes shows, Beyond Music, so, you know, some podcasts. And we were at a point where we couldn't hear the radio stations, and we were having difficulty with the technology, so we just plugged in the podcast. And boom, you know, Krista Tippett was on, and on Bing, and we just had a whole bunch of podcasts that we listened to on the road trip. And I'm like, that's it. This is it. And so then I researched the technology, and WordPress had just put out a template that was for podcasts. And so that's kind of how, and then Mike Cabello over here was interested in helping me with the technology part, and and so we just kind of launched it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's fantastic that you're, you know, and to me, what comes to my mind is you always hear folks talk about being risk averse. And, but I think, I mean, it just hit me. I think people thinking, oh, are you a person who's willing to take risks or are you not? But I don't know if that's the right conversation or the way to look at it, because what I hear is you obviously had to take a risk to do that.
I calculated out.
Well, okay, but nonetheless, it's still a risk. Whereas, so me, when it comes to maybe employment or my business
finances
probably is more the root of that. A little more risk averse. But then come up with some kind of crazy sport that most people think you have to be a nut job to do. I'm like, wow, sign me up. Why aren't we doing this already? So maybe there's just, it's not are you risk averse, but what kind of risks are you willing to take?
Absolutely. That's exactly it. And with the entrepreneur, the difference between a non-entrepreneur and an entrepreneur is the entrepreneur will take it with their finances.
Makes sense.
But it doesn't always work out the way you think it's going to work.
Well, I'm sure of that. Many of those stories out there, right?
Right, and that's why, you know, you just got to keep the cash flowing somehow.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, very good. We're finished with, we're at the tail end of our first podcast episode together.
Great. It's been fun. I'm like, wow, really? This is good conversation.
It's been awesome. All right. So would you like to have another conversation?
Absolutely.
Okay. And what we'll talk about is get into a little bit more of the sales process and your sales background and kind of how you've navigated your career.
Sure. Makes sense. Good plan. Thank you.
Great. Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. And just a reminder, June 19th, we've got our WeMentor mini lab, and Rick and I are going to co-present, and we're going to talk about the yin and yang of increasing revenue. Yes, in today's economy, especially. So we're going to help you upscale your sales process so that it makes sense for you and the people that you're serving or the product that you're delivering and to help you with the process and nail it down in a little bit more concretely.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So, we have 30 spots. It's 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., $79. The first three people who sign up at wementor.com, you can go to the buy button and just plunk in the amount, follow the directions, and I will respond to you, and we've got a special book for you. All right. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next Monday. Thanks, Rick, for being here. You were awesome.
Thank you. This was fun.
Oh, good. Mike Cabea, sound engineer, photographer, videographer, brother from another mother. Yeah, thank you. We're out of here.